More than I can be. Is anyone living, anyone here living their very best every day? If so, you ought to be up here instead of me, because I fail at living my best all the time. I'm sure that you would have some wonderful things to share that we all could learn. However, I am sure there are some of you who would agree with the words of the song, that God has raised you up to be more than you could be by yourselves, just as he has me, and some other examples that I will mention this morning. Jeff already read in your hearing from Matthew 9:27-31, about two blind men that came to Jesus to be healed. He asked them, "Do you believe that I am able to do this?" And when they replied positively, Jesus healed them and said, according to their faith, it would be done to them. When I read that passage a few days ago, it made me wonder about my own faith. Do I trust God enough to solve my problems, my fears, and provide for all my needs? You know, week after week, I sit in our Sunday school class, and we talk about having the desire to be better, to do better. But we say things like, but we're human, or life happens. But isn't that who Jesus was dealing with here in Matthew? Humans, humans that were blind, and blindness that had happened to them? Let's look at some other examples. In 1908, a baby girl named Ruth was born of German immigrants. She was one of 11 children. They had enough to eat, but not much of material goods. This girl was smart, and she did very well in school. Her teacher had her sit with other children and help them read. Her teacher also had her help others with reading music and getting the timing correct. But in 1918, the flu epidemic struck all across America. And it struck in her city, and everyone in her family had the bad influenza, except Ruth. God had blessed her with a strong immune system. That year, in November, both her dad and her older married sister died. That left this German mother with 10 children, and widows were not part of the workforce outside of the home in those days. The welfare people came and wanted to remove some of the younger children and put them in foster homes. But the mother refused and said somehow they would get by. Ruth and the younger siblings continued in school, and the older ones worked to support the family, and the boys hunted and fished for meat. Ruth eventually quit school to help the family because the older ones now were marrying and had families of their own. It was at 18 when she met her future farmer husband, and they were married in 1928. How did she do as a farmer's wife? She knew absolutely nothing about farming. She knew nothing about cooking and knew very little about housekeeping because she had worked outside the home as a young girl, and her older sisters and mother did that kind of work. What she did have was a great faith and trust in God to make her more than she could be. She remembered the biblical teachings of her parents, and her mother-in-law taught her to cook. She yielded herself to the Lord, and she became a godly wife and mother of 6 children. When the kids had recitations to give at community or church or school programs, she had them practice saying it loudly and clearly so everyone could hear. This was important to her because she herself was very uncomfortable standing in front of people to speak. She and her husband taught her kids, the kids, to be obedient to them and to God. And she helped in Sunday school, vacation Bible school, and many other ways of service. You see, God lifted her up to be more than she could be. I know, because she was my mom. Let's talk about Jeremiah. He was a great prophet of God. His personal life and struggles are known to us in greater depth and detail than any other Old Testament prophet. But it wasn't always that way. Jeremiah was the son of a priest, and he didn't think himself worthy or qualified to be God's spokesman. Listen as I read from Jeremiah 4, verses 4 through 9. The word of the Lord came to Jeremiah, saying, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart. I appointed you as a prophet to the nations." "Ah, sovereign Lord," I said, "I do not know how to speak. I am only a child." But the Lord said to me, "Do not say I am only a child. You must go to everyone that I send you and say whatever I command you. Do not be afraid of them, for I am with you, and I will rescue you, declares the Lord." Then the Lord reached out his hand, and he touched my mouth, and he said to me, "Now I have put my words in your mouth." You know, Jeremiah had a tough ministry. He was often in danger from political and religious leaders who were angry because of his messages. Through all of this, God protected him so he could continue to warn the wicked and to comfort those who did trust in God. It was during the time that Judah was steeped in worshiping false gods and every other conceivable sin. Judgment is one of the all-pervasive themes of Jeremiah's preaching, and the people really did not want to hear it. In Jeremiah 4:18, he says to the people, "Your own conduct and actions have brought this judgment upon you. This is your punishment. How bitter it is, how it pierces the heart." However, Jeremiah was careful to point out also that repentance, if sincere, would postpone the inevitable, the fall of Jerusalem and them being taken captive. His was a tough job. The people did not want to hear the truth. Jeremiah had told God that he was no public speaker and that he was but a child for this job. But God had chosen and equipped him, and God made Jeremiah more than he could be. Do you think that God can do that for people today? Can he do that for you? Can he do that for me? There was a young man I knew many years ago in Iowa. His parents divorced when he was young. The mom and the three kids moved to an apartment in a downtown area above an insurance office. His mother had to go to work full time. She was a very, very shy lady with so little confidence that she would never ask off work to go to any of the school programs or parent-teacher conferences, which were often held during the day at that time. Consequently, John and his two sisters suffered. John studied hard, and he did well in school, but he dropped out of college his third year because his life was at loose ends. He needed more finances. He didn't know what degree or what profession to pursue, and he knew that he needed some answers spiritually. But during that year, John grew as he studied the scriptures. He asked a lot of questions, and he soon looked for ways to serve God. This is a verse in Colossians that I think John took seriously, and it could be helpful for you and for me also. The Apostle Paul said something very helpful in Colossians' first chapter. Listen to these words from the Message translation. "As you learn more and more how God works, you will learn how to do your work." I'm going to read that again, because sometimes in our Sunday school class we say, well, how will we know what to do? How do we know about the answers? This verse says, "As you learn more and more about God's work," or how God works, "you will learn how to do your work." John was given the opportunity to help at church camp that summer. We just heard about church camp here. His biblical knowledge increased, and so did his service. As a result, he made the Lord the center of his life. Now, many years later, he and his wife, Carolyn, have four children, four adult children. They are very active in the large Broadway Christian Church in Phoenix, Arizona, and he is on the Korean Christian Mission Board. John would be the first to say that God raised him up to be more than he could be. Here's another complete change of life, lifestyle, because of God's love. We will look in Acts 16:22-34, and read about a man known as the Philippian jailer. 22-34. Let me tell you a little bit about what was happening in Philippi first. Paul and Silas had been there preaching and teaching, and a lot of the people didn't like what they were hearing. Sometimes it interfered with people's income when they proclaimed that idol worshiping was wrong or various things. And those people that made the idols, of course, this decreased their salaries, the money that came in, and they didn't like it. And here in verse 22, it says about Paul and Silas and the crowd. The crowd joined in the attack against Paul and Silas, and the magistrates ordered them to be stripped and beaten. After they had been severely flogged, they were thrown into prison, and the jailer was commanded to guard them carefully. Upon receiving such orders, he put them in the inner cell and fastened their feet in the stocks. Well, about midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns. Can you imagine being in jail and about midnight doing that? They were praying and singing hymns to God, and other prisoners were listening to them. Suddenly, there was such a violent earthquake that the foundation of the prisons were shaken. At once, all of the prison doors flew open, and everybody's chains came loose. The jailer woke up, and when he saw that the prison doors were open, he drew his sword and was about to kill himself because he thought the prisoners had escaped. But Paul shouted, "Don't harm yourself. We are all here." The jailer called for lights. He rushed in, and he fell trembling before Paul and Silas. He then brought them out, and he asked, "Sirs, what must I do to be saved?" They replied, "Believe on the Lord Jesus, and you will be saved, you and your household." Then they spoke the word of the Lord to him and to all the others in the house. At that hour of the night, the jailer took them and washed their wounds. Then immediately he and all his family were baptized. The jailer brought them into his house and set a meal before them. And he was filled with joy because he had come to believe in God, he and his whole family. The jailer had been commanded by his superiors to guard Paul and Silas carefully. So did you notice it said he put them in the inner cell? Now, I don't know much about prisons or jails, but it sounds like when he said he put them in the inner cell, it was to keep them from being accessible, or the outer cells or door to be accessible to them. He put them in the inner cell and then fastened their feet in stocks. That sounds like they'd be in there pretty securely, don't you think? And then we see another display of God's power. There was an earthquake that shook the foundations. And when the jailer woke up, he saw the prison doors open. He was going to kill himself because it would look like he was slacking off on his duties. Friends, did you notice it said that he was impressed by Paul and Silas, the attitude that they had? And then he asked them, "What must I do to be saved?" He and his family were then baptized, and he fed the prisoners in his home. And then in verse 34, it says that he was filled with joy. Don't you think that the jailer would join these others that I've talked about this morning and say that God raised him up to stand on mountains? That night, must have been a mountaintop experience for the jailer. Just think of the trust that he had in Paul and Silas in staying in prison and spending their time there and not planning their escape, but praying and singing. Now I want to ask this morning, how about you and I? Do we extend ourselves when God's work needs to be done? If time allows, can we help with VBS? Can we help with camp? Can we help do something for the Solomon's Women's Retreat in September? Our Hayes ladies are in charge this year, and many things still need to be done, especially this summer. Lori, Marcy, and I are the committee. So if you would like to help in some way, just come to us, and I'm sure that we'll find a little job for you to do. Is there anything that we can do to assist Amy, our church secretary, or Pastor Kevin, or any of the Sunday school teachers, or children's church? As a man, can you take time to attend the men's breakfast and Bible study once a month? Maybe we should be thinking about, how do I treat my spouse, the one that I promised to cherish until death do us part? How do we treat our co-workers, our employer, our neighbors? Okay. Oh, Betty, do you think these things really matter? Well, Paul says in Romans 14, verses 17 and 18 from the Message translation, that what matters in God's kingdom is the following. Let me read. And I quote, "It's what God does with your life as he sets it right, puts it together, and completes it with joy. Your task is to single-mindedly serve Christ. Do that, and you'll kill two birds with one stone, pleasing the God above you and proving your worth to the people around you." Now, most of us know the answers to those questions that I asked earlier about treatment of others, don't we? But why can't we do them consistently? Are we all that we can be? Or are we like the Sadducees in Matthew 22:29, as Jesus told them, "You are in error because you do not know the scriptures or the power of God." When Paul was weak, and he asked God to remove his weakness, which was actually a thorn in the flesh, God said, well, let me read it to you from 2 Corinthians 12, verses 7 and 8. Paul says, "To keep me from becoming conceited because of the surpassing great revelations," because Paul was pretty brilliant and he had been told a lot of things by God, and he was sharing them with others. But he says now, "To keep me from becoming conceited, because of these surpassing great revelations, there was given me a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan, to torment me. Three times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me. But he said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness.'" We sang the song this morning, "Amazing Grace," in that our chains were loosened. Do we believe, like Paul, that God's grace is sufficient? What did God say to Paul? My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in your weakness." Can we grasp the fact that God's grace is sufficient for us? Grace means unmerited favor, something that I don't deserve. When we have a weakness or a problem, and we rely upon his power, that power is made perfect in our weakness. In other words, it's an opportunity for God to shine. Also in Ephesians 3, it tells us from the Message translation, God can do anything, you know, far more than you could ever imagine or guess or request in your wildest dreams. He does it not by pushing us around, but by working in us, His Spirit deeply and gently within us. When we have a problem, when we are weak, we need to cry out to God for help in our weakness. We are made strong by the power of His might, just like Jeremiah, just like my mother, just like John Ford, and just like the Philippian jailer. We, like them, when yielded to God, will find this happening to us. God will raise us up to stand on mountains. God will raise us up to walk the stormy seas. And we'll be strong when we are on His shoulders. He'll make us more than we can be.
You've been listening to Betty Rep at Hayes Christian Church. Hayes Christian Church is a non-denominational fellowship in Hayes, Kansas. We are supported by the generosity of our members, attenders, and friends. The financial support we raise goes to projects which further spread the gospel to those who do not yet know Jesus, to local, national, and international missions, and they help to keep these podcasts free. If you'd like to share a monetary gift with us, please visit our webpage at hayeschristianchurch.org and click on the Donate button. Or you may mail your gift to P.O. Box 1111, Hayes, Kansas, 67601. If you have questions, comments, or would like more information, we would love to hear from you. Simply go to our webpage and click on the Contact Us form. Thank you for your generosity, and may God bless you as you seek to follow Him.